It's the Rob Carson Show. Are you ready to be pod smacked? Now, here's Rob Carson.
Hello and welcome to the show. For those of you who are downloading it from iTunes, iHeartRadio, TuneIn, Google Plus, Google Play, all of these sites, it's everywhere. It's episode 195, recording it on the 25th of October, 2017. Of course, I want to welcome our podcast radio network listeners as well. You can hear the show on Podcast Radio Network every evening at 6 o'clock Eastern, 5 o'clock Central. And of course, you're watching me on LibertyOneTV.com. LibertyOneTV.com. It is the ultimate expression of freedom of speech. They're adding some really, really big names. You ever hear of Rusty Humphries before? Nationally syndicated talk show host, friend of mine, guy who introduced me to Mr. Rush Limbaugh's radio program as a comedy writer back in the early 90s. He's going to join the network. We've got a bunch of new people joining this wonderful network, and people are beginning to notice. LibertyOneTV.com, guys, it's only 33 cents a day. How many times a day do you spend 33 cents? That's the change you get back at McDonald's when you buy a cup of coffee. $10 a month, $99 a year, and you are supporting free speech, and we can't be banned. A lot of conservatives are being silenced on Twitter, on Facebook, on campus. Ain't going to do it here. Not going to do it here. So welcome to the show. Please consider becoming a member, okay? A lot of stuff. A huge plateful of stuff to get to. The number one story of the day, the Washington Post, new bombshell, says that Hillary Clinton and the Democrat National Committee paid for the Trump dossier that has been the subject of much speculation and political intrigue. And by the way, it was debunked. This is the one that said Donald Trump got a hotel room in Moscow where Barack Obama and Michelle Obama stayed. He hired hookers to pee on the bed. No credibility whatsoever in that dossier. However, the Obama administration used it to get a FISA warrant to bug Trump Tower, to listen in and eavesdrop on conversations between Trump campaign officials and transition team officials. Completely approved by a FISA court. It's true. Barack Obama bugged Donald Trump's campaign. The report claims that Mark Elias paid Fusion GPS to conduct the research that led to the production of the dossier. Elias is the lawyer representing Hillary Clinton's campaign in the DNC. I said this from the get-go. There has not been a shred of evidence tying Trump with the Russians to upset the election. But this is actual, factual information that Hillary Clinton worked with the Russians to do the exact same thing. And I said that she brought up Russian collaboration with Donald Trump's campaign to distract from the real story, which is she's been in bed with the Russians. That's an ugly picture. But she has been in bed with the Russians since before 2009. When she became Secretary of State, Russian officials donated $145 million to the Clinton Foundation. Clinton Foundation shut down a few days after the election when she lost because there's no influence to peddle. Fusion GPS then paid a former British spy to put together the dossier. Was passed around media and political circles, wasn't published until CNN reported of its existence. BuzzFeed defended publishing the dossier, saying it was in the best public interest and that readers could decide for themselves if it had validity. Well, it didn't. The dossier was compiled by this British spy that presents the damaging information that the Russians government had in order to compromise then-candidate Donald Trump. The dossier has since been partly discredited. After the election, the FBI, under former director James Comey, agreed to fund Steele, the British company, but reneged on the deal after he was identified in the press as a source of the dossier. So there you go. The FBI was in on it. The Trump dossier was Clinton's dirtiest political trick. Hillary Clinton's campaign and the Democrat National Committee paid as much as $9 million for the discredited Russian dossier. And this, of course, flips the collusion script on its head. This is shameful. This is, I don't even know where to, it's so beyond corrupt. I don't know how the Clintons could be more corrupt than they have been in the past, but they really took it to a new level on this election. News organizations tried for months to confirm the details. The document became public, like I said, when BuzzFeed published it 10 days before the inauguration, while acknowledging it couldn't verify the contents. Okay. The finding also raises the possibility that the dossier is what led the Obama White House to snoop on members of the Trump's team. I just told you that. And leak the unmasked names to the Trump, anti-Trump media in a bid to help Clinton. In short, we now have compelling evidence that the dossier was the largest and dirtiest trick of the 2016 campaign, and Clinton, who played the victim card ever since her loss, was behind it the entire time. I said it from the beginning. This Elias character, Mark Elias, the lawyer representing the Clinton campaign, the DNC, and his firm, Seattle-based Perkins Coie, retained the firm in April 2016 on behalf of the Clinton Foundation. This is, of course, Fusion GPS. Fusion GPS research into the Trump was funded by still unknown Republican client. So there's a Republican anti-Trumper who was involved in this, too, has not been unmasked. The Clinton campaign and the DNC, through the law firm, continued to fund Fusion GPS research through the end of the October 2016, days before the election. The dossier became a lightning rod amid investigations of the Trump campaign's possible connections to Russia, which don't exist. Trump tweeted as recently as Saturday that the Justice Department and FBI should immediately release who paid for it. The dossier alleged the Russian government collected compromising information about Trump, and the Kremlin was engaged in an effort to assist him to become president, which makes no sense whatsoever. Who would you rather have, a bumbling Secretary of State or a hawk with America's interests, best interests in mind? The Clinton campaign paid Perkins Coie $5.6 million in legal fees from June 2015 to December 2016, according to campaign finance records, and the DNC paid the firm $3.6 million in legal and compliance consulting since November 2015. Unbelievable. Unbelievable. And if she would have become president, nobody would know anything about this. Nobody would know a thing about this. And we would have the most corrupt administration in the history of the country in office right now. The things you need to know about Uranium One deal, where we gave up 20% of our uranium reserves to Russians. The Hill reported that the FBI obtained evidence dating back to 2009 that indicated Russian operatives had utilized bribes and other methods of manipulation to become a heavier presence in the U.S. before the Obama administration approved the Uranium One deal. So they buried it. They buried it for years. The FBI buried it so it could happen. Donations potentially linked to the deal could also implicate the Clinton Foundation. According to a 2015 report by the New York Times, Canadian records show that during the Russian transition, Uranium One's chairman, as well as those with ties to the company, made donations to the Clinton Foundation, which totaled $2.35 million. The report also stated that Hillary Clinton did not publicly disclose the donations. Clinton at the time headed up the State Department, which was among the agencies required to sign off on the deal. In the same month that the deal went through, a Kremlin-connected bank, which also promoted the deal, paid Bill Clinton $500,000 for a Moscow-based speech. Source familiar with the FBI evidence told The Hill, there is not a shred of doubt that the evidence that we had, that the Russians had set their sights on Hillary Clinton's circle because she was the quarterback of the Obama-Russian reset strategy and the assumed successor to Barack Obama as president. Included in The Hill's report, and this may, I'm not trying to be, this can be confusing. Information about a Russian state-controlled nuclear energy subsidiary, there you go, that hired a Washington, D.C. firm to lobby the Obama administration. The Hill added that at the time the firm was hired, it was provided hundreds of thousands of dollars a year in pro bono support to Bill Clinton's global charitable initiative, and noted that the firm legally helped the Russian company acquire federal decisions that led to billions of dollars in the new U.S. commercial nuclear business. Some other things you need to know. Peter Schweizer broke the deal with Clinton cash. Clinton State Department, along with other federal agencies, approved the transfer of 20% of all U.S. uranium to Russia. That 9 foreign investors in the deal gave $145 million to Hillary and Bill Clinton's personal charity. Unbelievable. The New York Times knew about the scandal and confirmed it in 2015. Russian energy giant Rosatom had taken over the Canadian firm with three separate purchases between 2009 and 2013, largely coinciding with Hillary Clinton's time as Secretary of State. The FBI uncovered evidence that Russian money was funneled to the Clinton Foundation. The FBI uncovered substantial evidence that Russian nuclear industry officials were engaged in bribery, kickbacks, extortion, and money laundering in 2009. The agency also found that Russian nuclear officials had routed millions of dollars, like I said, to the Clinton Foundation. The Justice Department sat on the evidence for 4 years before looking to prosecute, by the time which, of course, the deal had been approved. There's a gag order, by the way, and Chuck Grassley and others are trying to get this. The Justice Department, the gag order on an FBI whistleblower, indicating that he may have more explosive revelations related to the case and on what the Clintons and the Obama administration knew about the case and when they knew it. Thick as thieves, folks. Thick as thieves. Thick as thieves. We had a lot of talk this week about a Gold Star wife getting a call from Donald Trump and a member of Congress politicizing it. Colorado woman named Julie Schrock says that she felt disrespected by Obama. Now listen to this. Her Marine son, Corporal Max Donahue, was severely injured in Afghanistan in 2010. He died. He was 23. She said, "I'm a Gold Star mother, and it pains me to see what is happening this week. The media bias is obvious to anyone willing to dig a little deeper than just believing what they hear on the news. When my son died, then President Obama not only made no effort to reach out, but the condolence letter we received was signed by a computer. He didn't even sign the letter. Then when I received multiple copies of the letter, I was told there was a computer glitch that wasn't fixed yet, so more would probably keep coming, and I should just throw them away. Not even sorry," she says. "I anonymously reported this to our local TV station, ran the story one time versus the 3 days of Trump mishandling a Gold Star condolence. Sad and hurtful, to say the least." It's a cough drop, by the way. I chew my cough drops. You know, and same way with hard candy. I chew it. I shouldn't, I know, but I do. But I won't do it during my podcast. All right, let's talk a little bit about what I mentioned. In a podcast earlier, it might have been 188, 187, something like that. But I said that Washington, D.C. and Hollywood are bookends of depravity around flyover country. And I've got some stories from Hollywood, including some sickening revelations about Nickelodeon. We watch a lot of Nick. We love our SpongeBob. My daughter loves to watch so many shows that she watches now. And I can't remember any of them. Loud House. Apparently the producer of Loud House might have sexually abused children. Yeah, that's just unbelievable. And also state legislators cross country. And I mentioned this also. It happened in Missouri. I live in Kansas City, and it happened in Missouri. A couple of legislators resigned last year because they were banging interns. Yeah. And I told you also that in Washington, D.C. and state houses around the country, when the interns arrives, it's like fresh meat being delivered, baby. It is. This is, I'm going to give you a little content warning on this because it's disgusting. Mimi Haley, represented by Gloria Allred, said that she was sexually assaulted by Harvey Weinstein. He lured her into a Soho loft in 2006, where he backed her into what seemed to be a children's bedroom, forcibly performed oral sex on her. This is where it's grotesque. It was that time of the month. And he removed the device that women use and proceeded to sexually assault her. This is so sick. According to Haley, she said, "Don't you feel we're so much closer to each other now?" To which I replied, "No." Cops in Los Angeles, New York, and England are investigating Weinstein for sexual assault. I hope the son of a bitch goes to jail. I hope he goes to jail, and I hope he's passed around like he passed around women. Oh, here's Bill Clinton's take on it, by the way. The musical take, actually. Done by my friend Jim Gossett. Thank you very much.
Weinstein, my fellow raper, stayed out of the paper.
Yep.
Cause they protect creeps like us.
Hey, honey, you better put some ice on that.
Weinstein, the Democrats' hero.
Oh, yeah.
We didn't hear zero when he was sending them cash.
Eight of them.
Weinstein.
Sounded weird. Eight.
Women kept their guard on, or they had a harder time keeping it in his pants.
Come on, sing it, Bill.
Sorry, didn't mean to scare you there.
Stardom, if you will just screw him. If you'll just do him.
There you go. You know, it's really... I remember when the Clarence Thomas, Anita Hill thing happened. And that's where I heard, you know, first heard sexual harassment. And I just never understood why somebody would do it. And I knew the boundaries. I just knew it. And I think maybe it's because my mother had a powerful influence in my life. She still does. But we, ever since, of every job that I have, we have to watch that sexual harassment video. Have to watch it, you know, have to be educated about it. Sign a paper saying you saw it. The only places where, well, there are a lot of places where sexual harassment continues and all-out sexual assault happens and goes unreported. And those exist in Hollywood, state houses, Washington, D.C., I'm sure there are others, but we're going to focus on those today. One of Harvey Weinstein's assistants who worked in the Miramax London office decided to break her non-disclosure agreement, which she agreed to as part of a settlement in 1998. Zelda Perkins said she was repeatedly harassed by Weinstein starting on her first day at the company. Sexual misconduct began the very first day. She ended up alone with him while working out of Miramax London office. He went out of the room, came back in his underwear. He asked me if I'd give him a massage. Then he asked if he could massage me. Weinstein said that she said would often walk around the room naked and ask her to be in the room while he bathed. This was his behavior on every occasion I was alone with him, Perkins said. I often had to make him wake him up in a hotel room in the mornings, and he would try to pull me into bed. The last straw that caused her to walk out of Miramax took place at a film festival in Venice, where another female employee came into her room saying she'd been sexually assaulted. She was white as a sheet and shaking in a very bad emotional state. She told me something terrible had happened. She was in shock and crying and finding it very hard to talk. I was furious, deeply upset, and very shocked. I said, "We need to go to the police." And she was too distressed. Neither of us knew what to do in a foreign environment. They got a settlement of about $500,000 to be split between the two of them. And they signed a contract in 1998. She was 24 years old at the time. She's not talked to Weinstein since, but she did break the non-compete. And who knows? She might be sued. I hope the son of a bitch goes to jail. Oh, I just hope he goes to jail. Somebody just needs to beat the snot out of him. Filmmaker James Toback has long had a bad reputation with women. The Los Angeles Times published an investigation. 38 women accused him of sexual harassment. Within 2 days, those numbers swelled to as more than 200 additional women. They contacted the Times in emails and phone calls recalled encounters with Toback similar to those detailed in the story. The majority of the new accounts, which have not been verified, told of Toback approaching women on the streets of Manhattan, offering them the chance to do a part in an upcoming movie, and a wide range of unwanted sexual advances behavior. Today's show anchor Natalie Morales wrote on Twitter, "Add one more exact Same playbook by James Toback when I encountered him near Central Park. In all honesty, I thought he was just a creep hitting on me with the oldest line in the book. Like I said on our show, I was just lucky. I saw pretty quickly what he was up to. Spokesman for the Manhattan District Attorney's Office said women are being encouraged to call the office sex crimes hotline number in relation to Toback. Toback's longtime agent, Jeff Berg, terminated his relationship with the filmmaker over the weekend. The Times story detailed a pattern of behavior carried out over four decades in which Toback approached women in New York and L.A., boasting of his movie credits and relationships with stars such as Robert Downey Jr. Then under the pretext of meetings framed as interviews or auditions, he asked explicit questions about the women's sexual histories, often proposing that they remove their clothes. The encounters often ended, according to many of the women interviewed with Toback, dry humping them or masturbating in front of them, ejaculating into his pants or onto their bodies. Toback is 72 years old, and he says he never met the women, or if he did, it was for 5 minutes and have no recollection. He says it's for the last 22 years, it's been biologically impossible for him to engage in the behavior described. I guess he can't get a hard on. Guardians of the Galaxy writer-director James Gunn posted a Facebook screed in which he declared he had been warning about Toback's sexual come-ons for years. He has done this to three girls I've dated, two of my best friends and a family member. Yes, he came up to her twice with the same stupid line, not realizing she was the same person. This is in addition to many other women I've talked to at parties or dinners with interactions with Toback. Publisher Judith Regan told the Times that allegations against Toback didn't surprise her. She alleged that he threatened to ruin her after she filed a lawsuit against him for breach of contract, fraud, and unjust enrichment. Scumbags. Abbott at SEIU, too, the Service Workers, Service Employees International Union. Vice President Scott Courtney has been fired after an investigation into his conduct with female staffers, including sexual misconduct. Allegations against him are related to sexual misconduct and abusive behavior towards union staff, according to a spokesman. Courtney recently married a union staffer. He was accused of nepotism, which is granting favor to employee, you know, because they have a relationship. BuzzFeed says that several current and former SEIU staffers spoke to them under the condition of anonymity to reveal Courtney had carried on numerous romantic relationships with women staffers and subsequently promoted them. SEIU spokesperson said this morning, President Mary Kay Henry accepted Scott Courtney's resignation. He's a. By the way, Courtney led the fight for 15 minimum wage. Remember, it was 10-10. They wanted 10-10, and then SEIU decided to say 15. You know why? Why, folks? Why do they decide to go from 10-10 to 15? Because $15 an hour will get you enough money to pay union dues. That's what it's all about. Yep. This sickens me. Nickelodeon and a producer, Dan Snyder. Stories are coming out about this guy. Corey Feldman's accusations years ago that Hollywood is a home of a lot of pedophiles with massive industry influence. Nobody listened to him because he was a messed up kid. He was a messed up boy. He was a boy. Nobody listened to him because he was a boy. And then he was a drunk, strung out adult, like so many. Feldman confirmed his own abuse, and his friend and acting partner Corey Haim had been abused even worse than Feldman. Apparently, Haim, and other young actors were frequently passed around by older executives and agents in what Feldman likened to a pedophile ring of sorts. I was surrounded by pedophiles, literally surrounded. They were everywhere. It isn't a particularly surprising tale. Different Stroke actor Todd Bridges descended into drug abuse and madness after his success as a child actor, largely due to sexual abuse he suffered at the hands of adults he'd been left with during his first years of filming. Rumblings are growing louder and louder that one of Hollywood's biggest producers of children's entertainment is about to be outed as a major incubator for pedophile executives. Dan Snyder is a former actor and producer at Nickelodeon. He's responsible for nearly every one of the biggest successes in the last 20 years. Schneider has produced and written shows that have given us breakout stars like Ariana Grande, Amanda Bynes, and Victoria Justice. This gets bad, guys. Schneider has been always been the subject of some very disturbing, consistent rumors for years. There were stories of his foot fetishes and how he acts them out on young extras alone in his office. There were stories about his relationship with underage teenage stars and how they led to spinoff shows for the girls or blacklisting for those who didn't participate. In Reddit, stories are coming out. One of the greatest examples of an alleged child predator is Dan Schneider, who created and wrote Zoe 101. All that, Victorious, iCarly, which we love, Drake and Josh. Robert Downey Jr. allegedly wrote the following statement about Dan Schneider on Crazy Days and Nights under the screen name, He's a monster, the worst predator alive. And if you wonder why nobody will confront or charge him, he's in charge of multiple hit shows for Nick, which rakes in oceans of money, tens of millions of dollars multiplied by many years and many shows, plus the merchandising royalty, which you know is huge. No tweener parent who shoved their kid into the limelight from birth is going to cross him either and risk career suicide and loss of revenue and residuals and a future career. By the way, there have been rumors swirling about Dan Schneider for quite some time. Rumors that he's the father of Jamie Lynn Spears' daughter. He got Amanda Bynes pregnant and paid for her abortion and took the virginity of countless Nickelodeon starlets. We'll see. Allegedly. Sam Elliott, who I just love, just a fantastic guy. One of my favorite movies is Tombstone. Oh, I watched it again over the weekend. Val Kilmer is just amazing. Sam Elliott, all of them were great. Kurt Russell. He says that women who have spoken out against Weinstein embattled filmmaker and embattled filmmaker James Toback, David O. Russell, and many others have shown the strength that will forever change for the better the relationship between men and women in Hollywood. How can that not be? Once you've given that kind of strength that this unveiling has given to a given population, the women of the world, how can you take it back? He expressed deep disappointment with how many women in this town have been put upon by men in the business the way they have for so long. Bill O'Reilly says that a tape exists where a female attorney offers $200,000 to a woman to accuse Trump of sexual harassment before the election. He said it exists. We have urged the person who has the tape to hand it over to the U.S. attorney because my investigative team believes there are three separate crimes on the audio tape. O'Reilly added, it's related to my situation. Former Fox News host admits that he does not have the tape. However, he claims his lawyers have heard it. So basically, he's saying that women are accusing Bill O'Reilly of sexual harassment and being paid off. Bill O'Reilly's paid $45 million to several women. Sorry, if you pay that kind of money, you did something. You did something. All right. I want to get to Jeff Flake's speech in the Senate here in a second. But I mentioned that in state houses in Washington, D.C., this behavior has been manifested for years. This is a great story today. I'm trying to think where I got this. I think it might be the L.A. Times. 2 weeks after Christina Garcia won a seat in the California Assembly, a high-powered lobbyist in Sacramento grabbed her rear end. An older male senator witnessed the event, which took place in 2012, told Garcia to keep quiet. The senator told me not to say anything because the lobbyist was powerful. More than a dozen female state legislators, staffers, and lobbyists in states across the country interviewed by The Hill, a Hill doing a great job, by the way, say they routinely face unwanted advances from their male colleagues, ranging from inappropriate comments about one's appearance and invitations to private meetings to physical contact, and in extreme cases, assault and rape. Many of the women used one word to describe the culture of harassment in their state capitals, and that is pervasive. It looks like half of the country's state legislatures have training programs or laws and policies meant to prevent, report, or punish sexual harassment. Many women just feel like that their complaints will never be addressed. Katie McFadden, who runs Sierra Club, Illinois, she says, the thing here is the power dynamics. If an elected official does something to me, there's no way it's going to be beneficial to speak out. I've had hands up my skirt. I've had my hair pulled. There's just kind of nothing you can really do about it. Listen to this. The epidemic of sexual assault and harassment is not limited to one party or to one state. Both Republicans and Democrats, they're equal opportunity molesters. States across the country said they'd experienced harassment and retaliation. South Dakota, Representative Matthew Woolman resigned his seat in January after admitting to sexual relations with two interns. Former state senator accused one of her colleagues of inappropriate comments about her breasts. A lobbyist this week said she had been raped by a man who works in the Capitol at an after-hours event. In Missouri, House Speaker John Deal, Republican, State Senator Paul LaVota, both resigned their seats in 2015 after allegedly harassing interns. Ohio State Senator Cliff Height resigned his seat this week after admitting to inappropriate conversations and contact with a state worker. State of Iowa reached a $1.75 million lawsuit with a former staffer for the state Republican caucus who alleged she was fired for highlighting what she called a rampant culture of sexual harassment. In California, the glorious liberal progressive state, this woman Garcia that I mentioned at the beginning of the story, Christina Garcia, said that 140 women, including six sitting state legislators, signed a letter this week calling out the culture of harassment. Pardon me, got a little cough here. Let's have another cough drop. As women and leaders in politics in a state that postures itself as a leader in justice and equality, you might assume our experience has been different. It is not. Each of us has endured or witnessed or worked with women who have had experienced some sort of form of dehumanizing behavior by men with power in our workplaces. This is the women of California. We're done with this. Women in states around the country described boys' club atmospheres. Jokes, serious misbehavior goes ignored. Of the 7,383 state legislative seats across the country, only 1,840. 24.9% are held by women. In the 99 state legislative chambers across the country, just 17 are led by women. Wow. One Republican legislator who asked not to be named said two male colleagues had harassed her repeatedly after she won election in 2012. Boy, it's fresh meat, right? When a woman gets elected, they are fresh meat. State senator made repeated advances, even claiming credit when one of her bills passed the state Senate to try to persuade her to engage in a relationship. At an out-of-state conference, he showed up at her hotel room, uninvited, with a six-pack of beer. Another legislator blocked her bills from advancing after she refused his advances. Isn't that amazing? She was told nothing could be done. There's nothing you can do. It's not a boss environment like the private sector. There's no HR. There's nowhere to go. They don't have a boss. Nobody had a boss. It's an impossible system to work through. It became debilitating, and I really had no recourse, this legislator said. The only thing I could do was completely adjust my behavior. I wasn't doing anything wrong, but I had to overcompensate for the fact that nobody would do anything about it. Garcia, who I mentioned earlier, now serving her third term in office, says she makes sure to have a buddy, a fellow woman legislator, at any post-work events she attends. Post-work events could be cauldrons of harassment. Many women interviewed cited a rampant culture of drinking that takes place after hours in state capitals. Seriously. Across the country, often it's lobbyist-sponsored events where informal networking take place. Unbelievable. Unbelievable. I don't even know what to say. I don't even know what to say. Jeff Flake is a senator from Arizona. He's not going to run again. And he took time to bloviate and basically, without saying the president's name, take down the president to some degree. I've got a few bites from this, and I'll comment as they go. Here's number one from Jeff Flake.
When the next generation asks us, why didn't you do something? Why didn't you speak up? What are we going to say? Mr. President, I rise today to say enough. We must dedicate ourselves to making sure that the anomalous never becomes the normal. With respect and humility, I must say that we have fooled ourselves for long enough that a pivot to governing is right around the corner. A return to civility and stability right behind it. We know better than that. By now, we all know better than that.
Okay. Civility. The last 8 years were very uncivil to Republicans. And they still are uncivil. Democrats spew a lot of things. They say that they want people to die. They want Republicans to die when they cut programs or cut the increase in spending on a program. They call now Republicans white supremacists. I'm not justifying incivility by the president, this president, but he's given them what for? Are some of his things untoward? Are some of them tactless and tasteless? Yeah. But some of the things he says and some of the people he call out, he's spot on. He's spot on. Everybody laughed at him when he said that that Barack Obama's administration had bugged his campaign. He's right. Everybody laughed at him. A little bit more from Jeff Flake on the well of the Senate yesterday.
It must also be said that I rise today with no small measure of regret. Regret because of the state of our disunion. Regret because of the disrepair and destructiveness of our politics. Regret because of the
last 8 years, politics descended to its lowest level. Right now, we just have a president, a Republican, who's fighting back.
The indecency of our discourse. Regret because of the coarseness of our leadership. Regret for the compromise of our moral authority.
Why do you have an 18% approval rating, sir?
And by our, I mean all of our complicity in this alarming and dangerous state of affairs. It is time for our complicity and our accommodation of the unacceptable to end.
This is so completely establishment and anti-Trump. This is the anti-Trumper, and he is an anti-Trumper, realizing that this president's policies are going to work. They find him to be an unsavory character, but they're seeing his policies work. Lowest unemployment rate, or fewest unemployment claims last week since 1973. Lowest unemployment rate in 17 years. Consumer confidence going through the ceiling. Dow above 23,000. I could go on and on. Obama era regulations going bye-bye to the tune of almost 900 gone now. Businesses coming back to the United States. The tax code possibly being changed in a revolutionary fashion. And unfortunately, because Jeff Flake was not a Trump supporter, he's going to be left in the dustbin of history. And he's mad about it.
If we simply become inured to this condition, thinking that it is just politics as usual, then heaven help us. Without fear of the consequences and without consideration of the rules of what is politically safe or palatable, we must stop pretending that the degradation of our politics and the conduct of some in our executive branch are normal.
Look at the last year, the last 8 years of Barack Obama. It was uncivil. There was name-calling. There was an obstructionism. Look at what he did. Look what he did using the FBI as a weapon. Using the FBI as a weapon. Getting a FISA warrant to bug a campaign. Using the IRS to go after conservative 501c3s. Dear God in heaven, man. I mean, come on, Senator Flake.
Reckless, outrageous, and undignified behavior.
Oh, I'm sure. You, sir, are so dignified. There are so many dignified people in Congress and in the Congress and the Senate.
Has become excused and countenanced.
The House and the Senate.
As telling it like it is.
Yeah.
When it is actually just reckless, outrageous, and undignified.
You are, yeah.
And when such behavior emanates from the top of our government, it is something else.
How high was the pedestal he was standing on when he looked down at Donald Trump and the rest of us?
It is dangerous to a democracy.
Sure.
Such behavior does not project strength, because our strength comes from our values. It instead projects a corruption of the spirit and weakness.
Wow, wow, wow. I mean, really, just nothing. The establishment doesn't like it when they get shaken up. Do you hear that? Did you hear that in the background? As he spoke, that was the swamp draining. He's the latest Republican to go down the drain.
I'm aware that there is a segment of my party that believes that anything short of complete and unquestioning loyalty to a president who belongs to my party is unacceptable and suspect.
Every Democrat member of Congress was behind Barack Obama. Every single one of them. In Washington, D.C., the establishment types hate Donald Trump. Those who are not love him. All of the Democrats were behind Barack Obama. This is the divide. And you just don't like being on the losing end.
If I have been critical, it is not because I relish criticizing the behavior of the President of the United States. If I have been critical, it is because I believe it is my obligation to do so. And as a matter and duty of conscience, the notion that one should stay silent and as the norms and values that keep America strong are undermined, and as the alliances and agreements that ensure the stability of the entire world are routinely...
Blah, 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 blah. He did this for 15 minutes, I think, before he finally said that he wasn't going to run again.
The notion that we should say or do nothing in the face of such mercurial behavior is ahistoric, and I believe profoundly misguided.
I just wish that I was as good and awesome as you. I just wish that I could be as good a person as you, Jeff Flake, you political insider, who, by the way, will not say no to a 2020 run primary bid against Donald Trump. Don't bother, Jeff. You have no chance.
Despotism loves a vacuum, and our allies are now looking elsewhere for leadership.
I don't think Israel's looking elsewhere. I don't think South Korea's looking elsewhere. Do you?
Why are they doing this? None of this is normal.
Yeah, it's not normal. See, and that's the ultimate right there. None of this is normal. They want to continue, the establishment types in Washington, D.C., they want to continue what they've been able to do for the last 50 years. All the payoffs, the lobbyists, the fact that seven of the richest counties in the country surround Washington, D.C., they don't want the apple cart upset. They have lived on the largesse of American taxpayers. They have moved to Washington, D.C., and they've spent their entire lives telling us how to live ours. And now there's a political insider who rejected them and rejects them. And they can't handle it. Down the drain you go. Down the drain you go. Did you hear about this former NPR CEO, Ken Stern? He decided that, and if you've lived in Washington, D.C., he lives in a very, Washington, D.C., the whole thing is liberal. It's a very liberal enclave. I think 95% of the people in the district voted for Hillary Clinton. Ken Stern was the head of NPR. NPR is as left as it gets. As left as it gets. They got a $300 million new headquarters downtown. Some of the shows have, you know, 1 hour show over the weekend has 14 producers. It's all government largesse. He decided he'd spend a year living like a conservative, going hunting, going to church, attending NASCAR races. His purpose was to write a book about the other America, and he wanted to see if he could learn something. This is from the New York Post, a piece that he wrote. For an entire year, I embedded myself with the other side, standing in pit row at a NASCAR race, hanging out at Tea Party meetings, sitting in on Steve Bannon's radio show. I found an America far different than the one depicted in the press and imagined by presidents. Clinging to guns or religion, remember that? And presidential candidates, basket of deplorables. At Urbana, I met dozens of people who were dedicating their lives to a mission, spreading the good news of Jesus, of course, but doing so through a Life of Charity and Compassion for Others, staffing remote hospitals, building homes for the homeless, and in one case, flying a powered parachute over miles of uninhabited jungle in the West Congo to bring a little bit of entertainment, education, and relief to some of the remotest villages you can imagine. Said it was all very inspiring and a little foolhardy, too, if you ask me about the safety of a powered parachute, but it left me with a very different impression of the community that was previously known to me only through Jerry Falwell and the movie Footloose. He was on with Tucker Carlson last night talking about the media bubble, which, by the way, NPR is certainly inside.
You know, so I was at NPR for a long time, and I knew, and I still know, that the people there try to tell a balanced story.
Yeah.
But what I never gave credit for until this time is that they live inside a certain bubble. We all do. And it drives what stories they think are important, what stories, what sources they look to, how they think about the story. And it's an enormous challenge, I think, for media, because it means that they don't tell the stories of half the country.
Yes, they do. And they look down their noses at half the country. They look at flyover country as a bunch of hicks, a bunch of hillbillies, a bunch of jingoistic Nazis. Am I jingoistic? Jingo all the way, baby. Very proud of my country. Very, very proud of my country and very determined to defend it. Here he is talking about guns. He changed his mind on guns, too, particularly legitimate defense gun use called DGU. The media says it is a myth. What it is when you people, gun owners and those who support like the NRA, they use statistics from defensive use of weapons to further the cause of the freedom of the Second Amendment. And here he is talking about that with, and this is, like I said, this is a guy who was left. He's pretty much alienated a lot of his family because they're all leftists. Here he is talking about guns in this country.
It's interesting. For all the issues I plunged into, climate change, poverty programs, and guns, I really learned a lot from people, from experts I wouldn't ordinarily talk to.
Yes.
I talked to John Lott about guns and learned an enormous amount from him. And the biggest story, thing, and I'll get to defense gun use, is, look, gun homicides in this country have gone down by over half over the last 20 years.
Wow.
As the number of guns in this country have gone up. We spend time talking about gun control, but we don't actually talk about the things that actually drove gun homicides down over the last 20 years. Why don't we talk about that more? The interest of the story, I didn't even know the term defensive gun use before this. And the Department of Justice estimates that it happens 60,000 times a year. There's a Florida State study that says about 1 million times a year,
But a lot.
It happens either way, high end, low end. It happens a lot, and I actually found stories. I told one of them in the New York Post this week about how people use guns to protect themselves. It's just an important part of the gun story that just isn't spoken about.
It's not spoken about. You hear it on shows like mine when some convenience store owner kicks somebody's ass with a handgun, or when some people barge in with weapons drawn and the store owner shoots them. No, you hear about stories like this, but they're not wide. They're not widely spread. Kathy Griffin is a bitter, bitter, angry, awful person. She's still mad because she held the severed head of a Trump mask covered in blood. And some people were taken aback by it. It was a threat. Well, she's out of the country, and she's speaking on foreign soil. Here she is talking on a Australian talk show called The Project. And this is one of the reasons why her career is effectively dead.
Because I'm scared of that guy. I was under a 2-month federal investigation for taking a picture of a mask. Anyway, yes, I'm excommunicated from my own country, so I'm here doing a world tour.
Bye.
But we have to make fun of him because he's so ridiculous and dangerous. And I actually have known this fool for like a moron. I'm going to call him a moron and also a Nazi. Because Americans are like...
That's a throwaway line. People are laughing at it. Do you know how serious the charge of calling someone a Nazi is? You ignorant and ugly on the inside and outside person.
Skittish about calling him a Nazi, but he's a Nazi.
No, he's not.
There's a Nazi in Newville.
No, he's not.
I just have some news for you. So
no, there's
heads
not.
And I've known him for a while, and so I think he did kind of personally come after me because, like, one time he BS'd me into actually hosting a charity gig, and of course I found out later he didn't give any of the money to charity. So he's just a big liar, and he's awful, and everybody should get rid of him soon. But I don't mean violently. What I mean is vote him out.
You know, they say there's no such thing as bad publicity and all publicity is good. Do you still feel like that after going through all this?
I do. And I'll tell you why. Even though my life has sort of been ruined and the Trump sons, who I call Eddie Munster and Date Rape, well, the one, Eddie Munster, is not even a full-formed human. He's like a Cro-Mag. And then the other one, I wouldn't trust him either.
This is why her career is over. Stick to the funny. Stick to the funny. Oh, Colin Kaepernick has signed a book deal. I don't know what kind of book it's going to be. I'm not thinking it's going to be real thick with the very small print. He signed with Random House. $1 million, apparently. And he's going to tell his story. He says the reason teams have given for not signing or reconsidering Kaepernick have been mostly mundane and defensible. He didn't say this. And he's going to talk about that and the grievance that he's fired against the NFL. You know, and it's not just sitting down during the national anthem. It's the Fidel Castro shirt. He said he didn't vote because he didn't want to support a system of oppression. Whatever. He just didn't probably even bother to register. You know, probably not even that. So let's see. Let's move on. I'm going to move off the political stuff right now. I'll save some stuff for tomorrow. Got some more stuff. And yeah, let's save that too. Now, I'm going to spend just maybe I'll do an entire show on cultural appropriation and children's costumes. Because I just, honestly, I'm thoroughly disgusted by people who would tell their daughters, their little white girls, that you can't dress as Moana. You can't dress as Tiana from Princess and the Frog. Red Book magazine has officially come out against white girls dressing as Moana for Halloween. The magazine says if your kid wants to trick-or-treat as one of these characters, you should, quote, think about using this Halloween as an opportunity to teach your kids about the importance of cultural sensitivity. And if your kids get upset, you should, quote, encourage them to step back and realize that they're awash in privileges and that real Moanas and Tianas of the world will never, will likely never see because the world is full of racist a-holes. Wow. That's Red Book. Cosmo is saying the same thing. Cosmo is saying if your daughter is white, don't dress as Moana. The reason it's racist. What did the article claim? Here's what it says. If your job as a parent is, it's your job as a parent to teach your kids about the importance of cultural sensitivity and allowing your white child to dress as Moana is racist. White girls have plenty of princesses to choose from. If your Caucasian son or daughter doesn't get to be exactly what they wanted for Halloween, encourage them to take a step back and realize that they're awash in privileges. It's important to stand up for people of color and minorities, meaning showing respect for their cultures. To pretend to be racial, ethnic, or religious minority when you're not makes light of their history and reinforces a deeply problematic power dynamic. These are cartoon characters, you idiots! The time to teach your children, there's no better time than when a kid is in their formative years to teach them that it's not okay to mock people, people's cultures. It's dressing for Halloween. It's make-believe. It's not mocking. It's not meant to mock. If anything, it's hero worship. That's the sort of attitude that will ultimately bleed into the way they behave when they get older. Do they respect the personhood of those unlike themselves, or is it their only concern doing whatever they think is fun? It's not about putting a damper on Halloween fun. Bullshit. This isn't about putting a damper on your kids' creativity. It's about exercising sensitivity towards anyone who doesn't get to choose how the world at large sizes them up. Whether or not the kids get that is up to you. And I also said that President Trump is a racist a-hole. Our country is a hate group apologist who tries to ban refugees from seeking asylum in our country simply because of their faith. By the way, the reaction very strongly against the premise of the article, and it should be because it's idiotic. I'm going to save a piece. There's a website, raceconscious.org, and they are twisted up with hate, and I'm going to get more into this tomorrow because I'm sickened by it because I've got a beautiful little daughter. And she's 12 this year. You know, this will be one of her last years she trick-or-treats, although I say she go as long as she wants. But she wants to go as a ninja this year. And so I was talking to her about this, and she's confused. Why can't I dress as Moana, whatever? And I said, well, there's this thing called cultural appropriation. And I said, I was just joking. I said, you know, maybe you shouldn't dress as a ninja because you're appropriating Japanese culture. And she kind of laughed about it. And I wanted to know the absurdity of this. You can't dress as a zombie because you are not a dead person. You are appropriating the caricature of a dead person. Same thing goes with Dracula. You can't go as Dracula because you're culturally appropriating someone from Transylvania. You know, I mean, it's absurd. It's absurd. Stupid. Let's save that Halloween story. I want to have a little fun here. Music. Ranker just put out a list of the best Halloween songs. Want to know what the? I won't tell you what the number one is. I'll go 5, 4, 3, 2, 1. Here's one. I didn't even know this. And by the way, this is a one-hit wonder by Rockwell. I guess I don't know if I'd say that's a Halloween song. Where's Monster Mash, by the way? Here is number 4 on the list.
I put a spell on you.
Screamin' Jay Hawkins. I like this song.
Because you're mine.
I love this song, man. That is character. I like that. And you don't, if for being ranked as number 4, you never hear that song. You never hear that song. And you don't, fortunately, hear this song much anymore. In your neighborhood, who you gonna call? Ghostbusters! If there's something weird and it don't look good, who you gonna call? Ghostbusters! All right, so there's number 3. Oh, here it is. This is number 2.
And suddenly, to my surprise,
there you go.
He did the Monster Mash.
Bobby Pickett.
It was a graveyard smash.
And the Crypt Kickers.
It caught on in a flash.
This is the Grandma Got Run Over by a Reindeer of Halloween songs. You know? What an absurd song they threw together. And man, it's... Being a one-hit wonder, that was a pretty big one. And, of course, number 1 on the list. I love this song. I was in high school when that song and the video came out. And it was epic. And this white kid from Iowa. And this Michael Jackson album Thriller, and it was the biggest thing, and everybody wanted to do the moonwalk. And we danced at our high school dance to this song. You could hear it again and again and again, and I still love hearing the song. Finally, one more kind of a kicker. Wallet Hub has done a rankings of best and worst Halloween cities on 18 factors, including price of Halloween party tickets, candy stores. Halloween party tickets? You pay for Halloween party tickets. Pumpkin patches, the weather, how good they are for trick-or-treating based on population density. Best, New York City. Okay, whatever. Jersey City, New Jersey, Santa Ana, California. Las Vegas, Anaheim, California. Vegas would be a fun place to trick-or-treat. Los Angeles, Chicago, Laredo, Texas, and San Diego, and also Gilbert, Arizona. Top, the bottom 10. Kansas City is one of them, by the way. Yeah, Kansas City, where I live. And this is the population center. This isn't the burbs, because where I live, it's a good place. And there are some rich neighborhoods, and I'm going to take the kids to the rich neighborhoods. You know, I shouldn't, but I did. Let's see, Birmingham, Alabama, St. Petersburg, Florida, because they're old people and they give out pennies. Detroit, Memphis, Cleveland, Winston-Salem, North Carolina. Greensboro, North Carolina, Raleigh, North Carolina, and St. Louis, because, you know, the number one costume is a shooting victim there. And it's not really a costume. Okay. It's time for me to get the heck out of here. This has been a good one. About an hour long of killer content. Still have a lot of stuff that I wanted to say, but I didn't get to it. But we will do it tomorrow. Same time, same place. Thank you, Podcast Radio Network, for broadcasting the show. Download it on iTunes, iHeartRadio, all of the big podcast sites. It's available for free. Just look Rob Carson Show. And, of course, LibertyOneTV.com. LibertyOneTV.com. This is a marvelous, marvelous organization, and I am proud to be a part of it. Join today. It's 33 cents a day, okay? That's all it is. It's $10 a month, $199 a year. $99 a year. Join today. In the meantime, God bless you. Have a glorious day, and I'll see you again tomorrow.
Thanks for listening to The Rob Carson Show. Friend him on Facebook at Carson Show, on Twitter at Rob Carson, and on Instagram, I think Facebook and Twitter are enough for now. We'll see you soon.